All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Extra Inning Softball Podcast. And my name is Carlos Arias, and joining me as co-host is Brett Eads. Brett, how you doing?
Doing great.
All right. And today we have some of the most gigantic brains in club softball. We got Jay Roberson from Birmingham Thunderbolts. Jay, how you doing?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
All right. We got Josh Fisher from Tennessee Modo. Josh?
Carlos, thanks for having me. Good to hear you, Brent.
Right on. Yeah. We also have Greg Borzaleri from Athletics Mercado. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing well, boys. Looking forward to it, and thanks for having me as well.
All right. Well, let's jump into it. The past few weeks, I've been working on the Extra Elite 80 16U Club Rankings. And obviously, we had to talk to you guys because you have three of the best teams in the country. And just want to start off, Jay, how has the fall season been going for you guys over at the Birmingham Thunderbolts?
Well, we had a really good fall. Our fall's a little different than these guys. I just took over as head coach of this team at the end of the summer, and we've had a lot of roster movement. So we've focused on getting better this fall, but we also, a big focus for us was just making sure all these kids blended well together, and we had good team chemistry. So we had a good fall. All the girls, new girls, returning girls seemed to get along well. We've gotten a lot better in defense, pitching, and hitting from what they had this summer. They had a really good team this summer. We just picked up some really good pieces and had a really good fall. I was pleased with the pitching, hitting, and defense, and team chemistry was, again, most important part when you have so many new kids coming on board, and that went really well. So good group of kids, good group of families. And it was a good fall. I hated for it to end this weekend, to be honest.
And you guys were hosting a big event this weekend too, right?
Yeah, we had our five-star showcase this weekend. Had teams from California, Texas, Pennsylvania, all over the country. We had 180 teams in. It was really good. My team in particular got a chance to play in Orange County Backbusters team from California, the Oklahoma Athletics Yeats team that had such a good summer. Played a Diamond Sports Hotshots team from Texas, East Cobb Bullets, and there was a fifth game in there. I'm just drawing a blank right now. But we had a good weekend. The five games we played this weekend were really strong, tested us. We saw good pitching, good hitters. It was really good. So it was a good weekend. Got lucky with the weather as well, which is always a coin flip in the Southeast this time of year.
Outstanding. And Josh Fisher, Tennessee Mojo had a big weekend too. Can you talk about that? I believe you guys were at the Marini Invitational.
Yeah, we were down in Vieira at the Wilson DeMarini, kind of inaugural event for them. Each age division, I think the prize package was a full sponsorship. And I mean, first of all, the complex down there, I've actually watched quite a bit of live streaming and stuff. I got some friends playing in the conference slow pitch, actually. So I've seen a lot of stuff down there, but the internet or live stream doesn't do justice for that place. It's unbelievable. The events first class, Jenny Ritter and all the Wilson folks. We're real proud to represent their brand for sure. Started out in pool play. We did not play our best ball. We went 2-1, and we really didn't hit real well. We pitched pretty good, real good actually, and then got into bracket, and kind of like some of the places we were at this summer, just started playing pretty good, and won a couple of close games, and then was able to get to the finals and win it. So, but it was certainly a collective effort from between pitching, hitting. We played small ball played really, really good talent. Like Jay was talking about, we faced some really, really good arms, and a lot of talent. And I mean, just the coaches the coach, coaches present there was a who's who for sure. Just represented throughout the Power Fives, mid majors, and beyond. But yeah, we certainly enjoyed it for sure. I'm feeling it today. I didn't get home till about 2 o'clock in the morning. So, but yeah, it ended our fall, and we really, really enjoyed it.
Awesome. And my game changer account, I follow about 400 teams. It was going nuts this weekend. But one team I didn't see was Greg's Athletics Mercado team. What were you guys doing this weekend?
This weekend, we co-host the Players Classic out here in California. And it just happened to be on the same weekend. Our gold team, Mercado Smith, ended up going out to that Space Coast Complex out in Florida. So they were out there. But this Players Classic is kind of my baby, where it's a unique format of an event where we do pool play on Saturday, but then we shut down the tournament in the middle, and then we do organizational-based workouts and team workouts so players can get individual skills and showcase in front of schools. And then we pick back up pool play to fill and shop at night, and then we do a bracket on Sunday. It's a go left or go right. So it's kind of a unique format where college coaches will get pool play. So you get your showcase games, you get your workouts, so you can see one-on-one skills a little bit more if that kid didn't get a ball during that game or something like that. And then they get to see elimination bracket and everybody go at it. So it's kind of an event I'm very proud of, and I think we just finished our third year of it. And, you know, we got teams coming in from further and further away every year, and we have waiting list building, and we're at 72 teams right now, and it's kind of where I like it, nice and small, and the competition is basically invite only, so it's really nice. That's where my team was.
Right on. And Brent, you want to get in there with some questions for these guys?
Yeah, I don't know where to begin. Sounds like it was a quiet weekend for all. the fall, you know, it seems like that's the window of recruiting has shrunk. And obviously you want to get exposure for your athletes, but at the same time, you want to build that chemistry. Jay, you were talking about that. If we can go in order of what you just talked, we'll go Jay, Josh, and then Greg. How do you approach the fall in terms of making it productive and setting up goals and then judging if you accomplished what you're trying to achieve? Jay?
Well, the number one goal for us in the fall, if we look at the fall, number one is practice, just trying to get better. You know, most of these events, but not all, we get an opportunity to bat everybody in our lineup instead of just nine. So we get a chance to get a lot of kids, a lot of at-bats, to evaluate them, to you know, kind of have an idea of what we have going into the summer. It's also a huge number two on our list is recruiting ground. Recruiting period where, you know, the few uncommitted kids you have on your team, you need to really focus on getting them in the right situations and the right spots for all these coaches that are watching these fall games. So for us, it was a combination of just really trying to get better, evaluating what we have, and getting some of these uncommitted kids a lot of looks. You know, it's just, you know, this weekend we had at just about every game we had, and I mean, I know this is not uncommon for some of you guys, but to have this in the state of Alabama, I mean, we played several games this weekend. We had Oklahoma, Alabama, Oregon, Texas. We had all these teams, just 30, 40 coaches at every game standing behind the backstop. I mean, some of these kids just don't get that opportunity. I mean, it's not uncommon to have 10 or 15 behind your backstop, but this weekend was really good, not just for my team, but the other teams at the event. I mean, I tend to see heavier coaching presence at these fall events than I do the summer events. I mean, it's just incredible opportunity for the uncommitted kids, but it's good and get to evaluate what we have. And again, use it for practice when you're getting to play everybody more than you normally would in the summer events where you have to turn in a lineup and just bat nine. It just gives you a real opportunity to develop kids and evaluate them. So I actually love the fall. There's not a lot of pressure on you to win every game you play. And it can be more focused on developing the kids than trying to win a tournament. So I love it. I wish there was a little bit more of the playing to win, but the showcase format, it has its advantages as well.
Good stuff. Josh, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that, you know, we have five or six kids that are uncommitted. I think a big thing for us probably would be, you know, is to try to get into the best events that we can find in the fall. You know, we did the D9, you know, rained there Friday a little bit, but it was still really good on Saturday and Sunday. Then we went up and played, you know, Jeremy at Scenic City, and, you know, played, saw Jay and them up there, did not play them, but it right beside them was both in a super pool, really, really good college coach presence there. I've played in Jay and those events a lot in the summer and fall. He's right. I mean, coaches are everywhere there. And then, you know, the Wilson thing, there was a lot. We certainly play every game to win. Last night, though, in the championship, I hit 11 kids. So, and moving kids around a little bit defensively, you know, just really trying before next September 1st to get the uncommitted kids, you know, a good recruiting foundation, and try to build up, you know, build something for them, get them at the right camps, figure out which places are right for them, and get as much information as we can with the rules, just based off of relationships with the coaches and stuff. But, I mean, we go out there and try to win every single game. Sometimes it might be with 10 or 11 in the lineup, but you know, with respect to the game, certainly every single game we're trying to win for sure. But I like the fall too. I cannot stand cold weather. We did get fortunate. I think it was a little bit cold at Scenic City in the morning, but crap, the weather has been good. It was actually yesterday in Florida. It probably, I live in South Carolina, and I know I've talked to my dad. He said it was warmer here than it was there. The wind blew all day, so it was cool down there. But yeah, I mean, we got fortunate. A lot of years I've played, and it's been a lot worse than it was this year. So a lot of coaches. I think that the summer, you know, it's a big event. I say big events, but a lot of your more national type events where you get East and West Coast, you still get a lot of college coach presence, you know, between Colorado, California, and then at the big showcases like the Bolts or Scenic City. But the fall, I think with this a short window of time there, you know, 3, 4, 5 week period of time to play, I think you get a lot better coach turnout too.
Awesome. Greg, I would assume you had good weather this past weekend.
Yeah, something like 85. I don't know, sunny.
Hey, that's not even fair.
That's not even funny.
California's
burning down.
I think you can skip asking him if he's had any weather issues.
Yeah, no, actually, well, funny enough, last fall we did. We actually, the October showcase for Surf City last year rained out. And we actually had a couple of weekends rain out in fall, and it really did disrupt a lot of recruiting for us out here last year. We haven't had that, thank God, luckily, so far, although there might be a threat of it this coming weekend for the early Thanksgiving, and that's the granddaddy of them all out here for us.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping it stays away, but our fall's been really nice. Every year, it's a little bit, I don't want to say different for me, since I kind of tend to stay parked in 16. So I'm kind of getting a new crop every year. This particular year, we have a combination of some kids that stayed from our fifth place finishing PGF team in 16, and then a handful that I brought up from our 14 and under group, and then a mix of kids that we grabbed from outside the organization kind of to make this group up this year. So every September, you know, after we take our little break, I mean, we're all about getting them together, getting that team chemistry going as fast as possible, working them really hard. And then, honestly, I try to find as many tournament-based events that I can find so we can create that competition level as fast as possible. I mean, our first events out, we always try to play up in 18s. Like, I think on my very first game this particular year, we were playing Marty Tyson's 18 gold team. So I was like, okay, here we go, you know, get these kids in it. And I think the last game that weekend was against Bruce Richardson's 18 gold team. So, you know, we really just try to create as much competition as possible what we do. So this way, when we are getting to that showcase period, once that October rolls around, you know, we at least got some games under our belts, and I think we'll probably get, you know, half a dozen in before we get to that point. But then we'll do the events like that PGF shootout, or Triple Crown does a couple other invitational type events that, you know, we get to turn in a lineup card, and it does make for a little bit of good competition. So we really start to see what we have to work on and what we have to build on. But you know what? Fall is all about these kids and putting them in the right spots to succeed and hopefully finding those homes for them. And I don't know if you guys experienced it this year. This particular September 1st was a unique fall for us. And one, I wasn't sure of how it was going to break out, but you know, in years past, you know, when we didn't have these, the rules in place the way they were, you know, we had two or three kids at a time and, you know, dealing with their schools and their visits, all that. It's a lot different to be dealing with 15 to 18 kids all at once because September 1's hit and you got all these calls coming in left and right. So, you know, it's a little bit like an air traffic controller this particular fall, it felt like for us.
Hey, do you want to jump in on that too? Because I'm sure, you know, you and Josh have, you know, it was a different, you know, format. So more to deal with in the recruiting department. So we'll start with Jay. What are your thoughts on that too? Okay, I think we lost Jay. How about Josh? Could you talk about the new rules format and how that's working?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy for me because I still had some kids. You know, I've been in 14 for a long, long time, so I had some kids that that actually it was their September 1st this year. My current team, I've got all 22s and 23s, so. You know, before that signing, or before the rule change there, we was able to get 9 committed there. I mean, literally prior to the rule change, I mean, we got one kid committed literally within 24 hours of the rule changing. With in terms of the actual feeling the brunt of the September 1st, that's not came for me yet. I mean, pretty much the kids that, I think I had 9 or 10 that I actually posted out, you know, on social media that I kind of worked with there, and former players that have kind of helped. But I mean, it was crazy because, I mean, a couple of those kids were literally, I said 20, I don't know, whatever the year was, I don't even know. I just know that it's crazy because, like Greg said, I mean, the calls come in at once. I mean, it's going to be next September 1st for our team. I'm with Greg for sure. I certainly understand what he's talking about because you can almost sense it that it's going to happen. I mean, I don't know that it'll be exactly September 1st, but we feel really good about the kids that we have on our team uncommitted, and we feel good about them certainly playing on the next level. Anything could change, but I'm confident that it's not going to be if, it's going to be where. So, you know, and that's a good problem to have for them, and we're trying to, you know, just build on that. But I mean, the rule is in the portal, the whole deal has changed the game for sure.
Right on. And Jay, yeah. Are you back on with us?
No, I'm here. You know, I'll tell you, I think Greg mentioned that he stays with 16s every year. And this is the third team that I've taken through 16s. And I'll tell you, the rule change, I think, is good for the sport. But I will tell you, it makes it a lot tougher job on a 16 under coach. My previous two teams I brought through 16s, every kid I had was committed by eighth or ninth grade. So I didn't have to worry with that. All I had to concentrate on was making the team better, coaching the team, winning games. And now there's a new dynamic to that coaching the 16 under team. Now I've got 5 or 6 kids committed, but I also have several that aren't. So, and you know, I'm having to spend a lot of time behind the backstop instead of just spending 100% of the time in the dugout and on the field. So it's definitely more challenging, but I do support the rule change. I had no problem with the way things were when my first team came through, my 99 team. When the kids were committing in ninth grade, I really didn't have a problem with that. But when it started going a lot younger, I felt like the rule needed to be changed. I've got two kids on my team that committed in seventh grade. I just think a kid should at least have to walk through a high school hallway at least for a semester before they're committing to where they go to college. I mean, the three, in my opinion, and I know people will differ, but the three most important decisions a woman makes in her life is where she goes to college, who she's going to marry, and whether she's going to have a family or not. And when those kids are making that first major decision in their life in seventh grade, I just think it's a bit much. No fault for the kids picking at that age, but I just think it's too young. But it's definitely added a lot of pressure because you have to make sure you're talking to these coaches and giving them accurate information on the kids, making sure you're talking to the right level school about the kid, where she fits. It's an extra work, but again, I agree with the rule. I think it was a positive change for the sport.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was getting like an arms race that was out of control. And, you know, they brought a little sanity back into it. Greg, who are some of the kids on your team that college coaches should be aware of and that you're trying to push and really spotlight them?
Couple of the ones that we still have that are uncommitted currently. Kayla Chavez would be a pretty good one. Very well-rounded player, just kind of does everything the right way. She's one of those quietest, best players on the field that, you know, you come to the game, she might not jump off the page, but when you take a step back and really look at the game, you go, oh, wow, that kid can play. Then we have a 2021 pitcher kind of still going through her decision-making process in Sarah Hindigas. She's been a really nice addition to our staff. She's been phenomenal this year. Then we have a catcher, also 2021, Alicia Costa. This kid could be very good defensive catcher. He's got a great pop time, can swing it. She's going to make a school very, very happy one of these days, very soon, frankly. I mean, the nice part about our fall is we've gotten a lot of traction with a lot of schools. I mean, we have a little bit of the history with them. So that is the one benefit of always staying in 16s is that they know to where to consistently come for the most part, you know, because we're at least, hey, we're going to be honest with them. We're going to give them a good product and, you know, hopefully give them some dynamite players down the road. But, this team really does have a number of kids. We picked up Allison Ha from another program around the corner. She's done a great job. Angela Ramos, that is a returner from last year, can really swing it. I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, just single out a singular kid, but, you know, the couple of 21s, and I will say that's one thing that I did notice more in 16s this year. I had more juniors wanting to be in 16 for this recruiting piece, or, you know, just to play on our level, than I have had in years past. So I don't know if that's going to be something that continues in the future or not, but it just seems to have happened this particular year. We got some dynamic 2022s that stayed with us from our 14th coming up. You know, Alexa Powell, one of the 2022 pitchers, Maddie Lucero. We got a great dynamite third baseman coming up through in Holly Farmer and Zoe Karam, another first baseman that really can swing it. So, yeah, we got some talent for sure, and I know I left out about three or four of them, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to – you got so much talent, it's crazy. Jay, any of your girls that you want to mention that, you know, are still looking –
Well, I mean, look – You put us in a really bad spot when you ask us to talk about kids, because if we leave one out, I'm gonna get a phone call tomorrow. But
I'll say, I hope, don't.
No, it's funny. That's exactly what I was thinking when I was naming kids.
I mean, look, we've got 22, some 22s. A lot of my kids are committed, but I've got some 22s and several 23s that are drawing drawing big crowds. You know, and Maddie Fry's a kid, 22 from Tampa area that we just added to our roster that has proven to be a absolute stud. I mean, just light tower power and hits for average. Great catcher, great third baseman, cannon arm, great kid. Now, you know, a lot of the schools, Power 5 schools in Florida already knew about this kid from coming to camps and for the team she was on before she came to us. But she's opened a lot of eyes from the other Power 5 conferences, SEC, Big 12, with her bat and her arm this fall. I mean, this kid's incredibly strong. I mean, she's 22 and she deadlifts 320 something pounds. I mean, the kid's an absolute animal. We've got a 22 pitcher from Virginia, Madison Insko, that's drawn a lot of coaches to watch her pitch this fall. We've got some really, really good 23s. Katie Flannery, a 23 on our team, you know, she hit 8 or 9 home runs this fall, just high average, had a really good fall, and I'm quite sure got her name added to a lot of lists this fall. And we've got several more. I mean, you know, Keith Dorsett's daughter's a great player. You can play her in the infield, outfield. You can hit her anywhere. Hits for average. And again, I'm going to forget people, so I hate to talk about individuals, but we got a good group. All of my uncommitted kids will sign at good places, and they're drawing a lot of attention. So recruiting's going well. And one thing, and I know this isn't the subject we're on, that Greg mentioned, winning 16 and under has usually been one of the easiest divisions to win at PGF, because a lot of the kids that committed in 7th, 8th, 9th grade would skip at least 1 year of 16s and sometimes 2 and go straight to 18s. Last year, I noticed there are a whole lot more second year 16s staying down in 16s, either for recruiting or because they just want to keep playing with their friends they played with for 5 or 6 years. 16s was the strongest field of 16s I've ever seen at PGF last year. And with this rule change, I think you're going to continue to see that. There's a lot of 21s that have 04, 03 birthdays. And they're all those kids, most of those kids, a lot of those kids are going to stay down in 16s instead of moving up. So winning 16 and under is a lot more difficult than it has been when I was doing this years, started doing this years ago. 16s will be really strong this summer.
No.
Yeah, I agree. That PGF field list past year was as good as I remember it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough.
Brent, do you want to get in on a question for these guys?
Yeah, going in a different direction. I'll talk to Josh.
Hang on. Can I talk about the uncommitted? Since everybody else, I want to talk about the uncommitted kids I have just real quick. Can I do that?
Yeah, go for it, Des.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I've got a 22 that was committed to she actually decommitted from an SEC school, Taylor Pannell. She's one of the top 5 players in the country, I think, in the 22 class. I mean, in pretty much to both the major publications anyway. She's starting third baseman. She made she was on the all tournament team at PGF. Third baseman. She's one of our leaders. Can hit the ball to all fields. Steals a lot of bases for us. High on base percentage kid. Really, really good hands. I mean, she's going to be a kid that, you know, I think, you know, just her alone will keep it busy next year at this time. Also, another kid I've got is really a center fielder or either corner of the outfield. Taylor Malvin. Again, she was committed to Syracuse, decommitted when Coach Bosch went down to Florida. She actually played with me as a first-year 14. She's a lefty slapper that hits the ball well to all fields, uses a short game, can bunt both lines, can hit the gaps, can stand still and hit. She's also a really, really good base stealer. Both Pannell and Malvin, both high softball IQ for sure. Another 22 I have is Taylor Hess, lefty pitcher, probably 5, 10, or 11. She's an all-state volleyball player up in Minnesota. Anywhere 60 to 64, a really, really good changeup from the left-hand side. She's also receiving a lot of attention. She commands all of her pitches. My pitching coach, Laura Rothrock, is actually her pitching instructor. So just a superb kid. I mean, we have – like Jay was saying, we have a really good group of families that are bought into what we're trying to do. So I think that that makes the whole recruiting process easier when I think you've got the family supporting everybody. And then I also have a 22 Aspen Calloway who has really a third place finish at PGS in 10s, second place in 12s, and took a year off and is now back with us. Took her a couple of tournaments to get going, but was second on the team and hitting this weekend. She's a right-handed hitter from Knoxville, Tennessee. that she can hit. I mean, she can hit elite level pitching. She can hit fast. She can hit slow. Never says a word, and just we're enthused to have her back for sure. Panel is from Milan, Illinois. Malvin's from Johns Creek, Georgia. S is from St. Augusta, Minnesota, and Callaway from Knoxville, Tennessee. I do have 123 that I just picked up that we're just jacked up about. She's from Lakewood Ranch, Florida, Cassidy McClellan. This kid can go. She's a lefty slapper, but the ball hops off her bat when she hits the ball for extra base hits. She can fly. I mean, her arm is through the roof good. We're jacked up about her for sure. I think she's going to be another big Power Five. We got her from really kind of – they were playing a national schedule, but more of a regional type roster. So we're excited about her. And then the last one, we have 24, Jolie Adams. She was my starting center fielder for our national title team. Pretty much started every single game in center field. She's from Dyer, Indiana. Strong. She's a lefty. Big arm, above average speed, and just, she's a really, really, really good hitter. Doesn't strike out much. Another high on base percentage kid, and a kid that's just a freak of an athlete. One of our stronger kids on the team for sure.
Outstanding. All right, and Brent, I know you wanted to go a different direction now that we've heard all the recruiting talk, and I love it too. I love recruiting stuff. It's great.
That was awesome. I think our rankings are pretty much done for the next couple classes, so thank you guys. I'll just have to transcribe what you said. No, having watched a lot of those players, they're awesome. So it's going to be exciting to watch the development of these young athletes over the next couple of years. One question I wanted to ask is, you all touched on how 16s are different, and there's a lot of talent, and it's good to hear that there's a lot of coaches there. Do you think that 16s and 18s will be impacted much by the transfer portal in the sense that colleges might not go after younger kids? They're just going to wait and see who falls out of the sky when players maybe are going to look to change colleges? No?
Oh, I'll be happy to jump in first on that. 100%. More and more, these kids are not just competing against their teammates and other kids in travel ball. They're competing against every single kid in college right now, too, that's putting their name in that portal. We see it more and more that schools are holding behind scholarship money because they know somebody's going to go in there. The one thing that, I would caution, kind of everybody on is, yes, that is absolutely affecting recruiting because I got kids that you would think, three, four, 5 years ago, these guys are off the board already, that they're still hanging around because they're starting to wait for schools to make decisions on either portal kid or non-portal kid. But some of these kids in college, they don't truly understand the fact that some of them think that they just put their name in this portal and this scholarship money is going to just magically appear and they're going to have a school sitting there waiting for them. That's not the case. I know several D1 players that were going on great rides to schools. They're sitting at junior colleges now at home because they didn't have a school pick them up by that first semester. And they're going in uninformed. So it's really an interesting situation. That's the next piece that really needs to be fixed. That portal is an interesting piece of our sport right now.
Greg, one thing I'll mention on that is, everybody knows that most Power Five coaches will save 25% in their each class every year where they've always got a full ride sitting in their back pocket if a kid happens to transfer. It's always been that way. The portal has gotten so out of control. I had an SEC coach tell me this weekend that they now are keeping at least 50 to 75% of a full in their back pocket in every recruiting cycle because of the portal. So that's that much more money they're holding back from offering to high school kids because you can't blame them for doing it because there's so many high quality kids in the portal, but the portal is getting a little bit out of control.
I'll piggyback on that. I had a couple of conversations too and saying that one of the main reasons I think right there too is I think as the years go, You know, whatever, you had the first couple of years of the portal. Well, you got next year. I think you're going to see more and more of scholarship money getting held back because a coach, wherever they are, I mean, you may know that, okay, if you're in the SEC, the kid's not going to transfer, can't go in the portal to the SEC. However, they can go to another Power Five. So the odds of if a coach is out recruiting a kid and they can go recruit a kid from their state and they can use academic money, life scholarships, hope scholarships, whatever it is, to whereas the portal, they have no idea who's going to be in there, much less what state they're going to be from. So I think that adds to, you know, them holding, you know, like Jay said, the more funds back. So, I mean, I agree with Greg that certainly I think that you're going to see not only competing against classes of, you know, the grad class, but you're recruiting. I mean, you're competing against the portal quite certainly.
Yeah, and look, I'll tell you, for these college coaches, the kids that lose kids, I mean, it's a negative for them. I mean, you've got kids, they have kids on their roster that they've invested a year, sometimes 2 years of work in to develop this kid that might be a starter for them for 2 years, their junior and senior year, and they're not patient enough to wait and they leave. So that hurts those college coaches. They've got a lot of time and money invested in those kids, and then they just up and leave because they didn't start as a freshman or sophomore. That's the bad side for the college coaches. But I will tell you, the good side for them is if you have a coach that takes over a new job at a new program, mm-hmm. If they took over a roster that needed to be upgraded talent-wise, it used to take them 3, 4, 5 years to rebuild that program and get them where they want it. Some of these new coaches that have taken over some of these programs, boy, that rebuilding process has sped up unbelievably through that portal. I mean, you're seeing things.
The other side of it, too, is – that's the other side of it is you've got those coaches there, like Jay's talking about, that they don't have a clue that they're going to be going to the portal looking for players. The coaches that have no idea until whenever, right before the season, end of the season, whenever that window of time a kid can get in the portal, well, I mean, you got to go replace those kids. I mean, some of these schools have lost 4, 5, 6 players that – a coach gets scrambling to try to find a player. Well, where do you think they're going to try to find a player? So, I mean, and may not have the funds or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think, again, you're going to see a lot more scholarship funds being put back just due to that reason there. I mean, both sides of it.
Yeah, we've seen this, big time affect college football, and it's interesting that it's going to be affecting softball this way too.
Oh, absolutely. We've already seen it. It's already here.
Right on. So, we talked about the fall season, recruiting and the portal, which is an awesome name. Anyways, what about the upcoming summer? Who out there is really impressing you guys? Who is, through this fall that you've seen, we should be keeping an eye on, come spring and summer? I'll throw that to you, Josh. I mean, why don't we start off with you on that one?
Well, I mean, we're coming from really the second year 14 group. I mean, obviously, the two guys you got on the phone there are certainly – both of them are always – I mean, I'm familiar with both their rosters, not as much Greg, but definitely Jay's. And, I mean, he's got as good a team as anybody in the country, first year, second year. Again, I personally don't look at it as a first and second year, especially when you get to 16. I mean, I think the kids are physically – I do think there is, from a second year team that's older – I think sometimes it can be physically maybe more mature a little bit, but I think it boils down to talent, and I definitely think he's got that as well as Greg. I mean, he's always up at the front. Just in terms of teams that I know probably more about the first-year teams. I mean, I really, really like the Texas Bombers Burgess team. I think he's added some nice pieces. They're just extremely talented for sure. Of course, Marty's always put a good product on the field with the Angels. I think just any of the A's programs, Batbusters, the Beverly Bandits. I mean, I saw Matt's team this weekend. We actually played them Saturday, was in a 2-1 game with them. And then our second year team, Brooks Cherry's team, we played them yesterday too and won a one run game against them. And I'm just going to tell you, they can hit. He's got some Alabama commit, Aubrey Barnhart. I mean, she's as good as it gets. He's got a couple of uncommitted kids that one of them's Caden Baker. She's really a shortstop infielder, can play the middle, can play the outfield. And I mean, she's a professional hitter. I can tell you that she's an uncommitted kid too. Just extremely good. I think Brooks's team can cause some issues. And again, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably missing whoever. I don't really know. I mean, Central Cal, the Pickering team was a little lefty. I can't call her name, but I can tell you it was when we played them at PGF. It was nothing in the seventh. But, I mean, she just.
That's Ryan Maddox. Is that kid's
name?
Yeah,
she's special.
Faced her yesterday.
She's straight,
that kid can spin it.
Yes, straight up special. I don't care, first year, second year. If you've got her in the circle, you've got a chance to win. I mean, she's just commands the zone.
Yeah.
Just
yeah. This says the man. Says the man that's got Rothrock.
Yeah. I mean, she's fast. I mean, I like my team too now. I mean, we've got.
Listen, Josh, I'm not hijacking you, but I'm going to make this one comment.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for 13 years. Montana Fouts played for me. And I'm telling you, that Rothrock kid's the best young pitcher I've ever seen.
At PGF, she was amazing out there for me. I mean, just this weekend, just because it's fresh on my mind. I mean, she had close to 40 strikeouts and, you know, 20 plus innings. She just don't walk anybody. I mean, she works the zone. She keeps her pitch counts low. I mean, that's what I always look at when, you know, you get done. If you go look at my game changer and you see, oh, Rothrock threw 20 innings, the number two pitcher threw 10 or 11. And then you go click on it and you look at the pitches she threw and you're like, all right, hold on. And so I think with time limits, our 80-minute finish the inning or finish the batter, I don't know that you can look at innings pitched. I think you got to go look at number of pitches thrown. And when you look at that number, that's the number that jumps out at me with her, just because she can keep that pitch count down so low. I mean, she's a phenomenal kid. Just the rest of my players real quick, guys, just so I can make sure I get everybody in there. But for my team, we've got also got Mia Williams, my starting shortstop. She's a Florida commit, just like Rothrock. She was the number 123 in the country. She's my two-hole hitter. She can hit it all fields. She crushes it. She can really run, really high base stealer. Hit close to 20 home runs for me this year. She's a superb player. I've got Jaden Shorty Goodwin. She led my team in batting average this year. She's a Georgia commit from Paris, Kentucky. She's been with me about 3 years. She's a kid that it don't matter where we go, who we play, or what we do, she's always at the top of hit, you know, in terms of numbers. She's a kid that would be very, very difficult for me to trade for anybody that I've really almost ever had. I mean, she's just – her and Williams have been staples, certainly in the front of my lineup for a number of years. I also got Macy Bazeron. She's a LSU commit. She's also, like Goodwin and Williams, they made the all-tournament team at PGF, catcher. I think, again, now, I don't know all of the catchers in the country. I don't know the older ones. What I'll tell you is, if there's many better arms than her from her pop times from home to second, then I need to put my eyes on it and see it. It's amazing. She threw 9 out of 10 base runners out this fall. She was actually wasn't with us this weekend. She had a family situation. She had to stay in Louisiana, but she's just top 10 player in the 22 class. Also have a Kadra Parker. She's South Carolina commit, like Goodwin. She's been with me and Williams for a long time. Starting right fielder, lefty hitter, can hit it, can really hit it to all sides of the field. One of my most talented outfielders, has a big, big arm. And then got a new pickup. His name is familiar, but it's really, really helped our lineups. Lily Valamont, Trenton, Michigan. She was on the 1600 national title team this year with another organization. We like her a lot. She had a huge – she tied for the lead in hitting this fall. We like her just a whole lot. She's also a top 10 player. And then we got Emma Ralph, who's an Auburn commit, another pitcher we got, and she's a high-velocity kid, threw a lot of innings for us, had a really, really good weekend this weekend, and pounded the zone, and the kid can hit, too. She can hit for power, and she's just a great kid, really, really good family. She's, I think, a top 15 kid in the class, so I think that's all of them. I'm gonna make sure, because if I don't, my phone will ring, just like these guys said. But yeah, I mean, so I like my team too now. But again, I get sketchy, like I told you, Carlos, when you asked me about those rankings. I like starting off with the teams that I told you, like the team, like these two guys' teams here. When I listed who I like, I'll put them in front of me, just because I don't know. And again, I do not know the second year teams. I mean, you know, Jay's saying that about the Rothrock. Well, his 99 team, go tell, get that profile sheet and look at it when they were first year 16. Because I remember what it was like.
Yeah, they were. I'll be honest with you.
I was at Explosion.
I can remember looking at it. I looked at it at the hotel one night. I was like, gosh.
Look, I'm gonna be honest with you, and you guys can ask around the college coaches, and I'm telling them the same thing. That 99 team was special. This team I have now has a deeper pitching staff. We're a better hitting team. We're a better defensive team. But what I haven't found out is that 99 team refused to lose a game. When they sit in the batter's box, they refuse to lose a one-on-one battle with a pitcher. My pitchers refused to lose a one-on-one battle with a hitter. That team was just tough as nails. Now, if this team I have turns out to be tough as nails like that team, this team I have now is more talented than that 99 team, but they got to prove to me they're as tough, mentally tough as that 99 team. That 99 team just wouldn't lose.
That's a rare quality. But, Jay, let me get your thoughts, too, because, you know, you're really good at kind of analyzing all the teams out there.
This is what I'll tell you. This is what I'll tell you. They're in 1600, how many years in a row has the Beverly Bandits won 16? Is it two or three?
I don't think it's in a row, but they've dominated.
I think they got three out of the last four, though, something like that.
Yeah. So I mean, look. So when you start ranking 1600 teams, Bill's going to put a team in that 1600 division every year that's as good or better than anybody. And so when you start talking about ranking 16s. You automatically have to put one of his teams close to the top. You have to, they've just proven it over and over. Josh's team is coming in from just winning a 1400 national championship. You got to put his name at the top of that list as well. And then after that, there's just a lot of good teams. I don't know a lot of the second year teams. The Beverly Bandits has got a really good one.
They do.
Mojo, Brooks's team can flat out hit. Our 03 team can flat out hit. There's a Texas Glory team, and I don't know which name goes to the end of it, but I know there's a really good second year Texas Glory team out there that's a really good team. And the first year 1600 teams on this half of the country, there's just a lot of good ones. Josh's team is really good. My team's really good. Burgess
is good.
Yeah, correct. Bombers Burgess is really good. Nathan Nelson's always going to have a good team. He's one of the best coaches in the country. There's just the first year 16 talent level is huge on this half of the country. Now, I can't speak for California. SoCal Athletics are always – Mercado's always going to have a great team in every age division. Batbusters will. I just don't – those kids move up age divisions so much that I don't know what they're going to have on their rosters rolling into the summer. But, of course, there'll be great California teams. But there's a lot of talent on this half of the country, too. A lot of good teams. And, look, I'm telling you, 16, like I said earlier, I'll repeat it, second year 1600 PGF is a whole lot harder than it used to be. With the early recruiting, those kids were committed in 7th, 8th grade. Sometimes they would skip 16s altogether. That's just not happening anymore. And you know, and my team, I mean, I like my team. I mean, I've got the Strew kid and the Johnson kid pitching that are both committed to LSU. I've got the Ensco kid from Virginia that's drawing a lot of coaches. She's uncommitted as a pitcher as well. I got Sam Rowe behind the dish. Sam Rowe's been rated anywhere from number one to number three, four, or five in the country in the rankings on the websites. The Maddie Fry kid catches, plays third and first for me. She's a stud. I got Brianna Condon, Juice as we call her, in the infield, committed to South Carolina. Maddie Manning committed to Oklahoma in the middle infield. You know, I got Neely Taylor, whose sister's a freshman at Florida right now, is my leadoff hitter from Arkansas, lightning fast, really good player. Gracie Hillman. We got a good team. I'm not saying we're going to win it, but I can tell you we will be able to compete with anybody in the country. We may go 0-2 at PGF, but we're a good enough team where we should be able to line up and be able to compete with anybody. We're really loaded with talent.
Well, I'll guarantee right now you're not going to be 0-2 at PGF.
Greg, I'll tell you this too, Carlos, just to tell you a little bit more about I am not going to toot the own horn of our organization, but I'll tell you this, that as far as Brooks' team, you know, he's kind of had the MO of just being able to hit. Well, he's picked up Erna Carlin, Texas Tech commit, over from a Texas organization that has changed the dynamic of his team, because he's got now, along with the Aiken kid committed to Michigan, who, I mean, when they won the J.O. Cup, she carried him in the circle. But defensively, they're really good too. Like the aforementioned, I told you about the Baker kid. But I mean, yes, they got an Auburn commit, Riley Moody. That yesterday, I'm telling you now, we won the game 5-4. She saved three runs. We hit two balls. Literally, the fences were set at 2:30. The winds were swirling. We hit a couple of balls. I mean, just crushed. And she went back. Probably saw the best catch in the outfield that I've seen in 2019. He just actually picked her up, and man, I mean, they can play defense. He's got, I don't know how many other arms that he has. He got a good pulse on his team because they were second year, but I can tell you he's got two really, really good ones. He's going to be an issue. I can tell you his team will be an issue. Yeah. I think they'll be there at the end.
Sure. And Greg, let's get some West Coast representation. You always are a good scout and know what's going on out there.
Well, anytime I got Kiki Estrada, Arkansas commit, swinging with Emily Levin in the circle. No, I'm kidding. True, those guys are good. I really like my kids as well. I mean, we're about as balanced and deep as I've had a group in, probably the same, about that 99 range team that I had come through. Last year's group was really good, but it's really top heavy, and we kind of didn't have the depth that we have this year. But we're really versatile this year. So I do like us on the West Coast, but some of our local teams around here that I'm keeping my eye on that could be really good. Brashear's team, they can really swing it. And he always puts a good product on the field. Yep. Marty's going to be dynamite. Absolutely. The Bandits Hellbring team did come out for the PGF shootout, so we did get a chance to play them. That's a very good team, especially with that pitching staff that he's got.
No doubt.
Yeah, they're pretty dynamic, so I really like them. One team I really like that is flying, I don't know how far under the radar for you guys, is that Illinois Chill team. We played them at D9. We did not play well, but they sure did.
We tied them at Scenic City. I'm going to tell you right now, we tied them at Scenic City at 1-1, and I'm sorry I left them off because I overlooked them. Yeah, I promise you they're good.
That's a solid group right there. Some of the other SoCal teams, I mean, Batbusters, they're going to have a great team. I don't know which team it's going to be, but when the time is there, they're going to be there. They always are. That Dirt Dogs Pickering team, that's a solid group. We were in a battle with them yesterday. We were lucky to come out on top, but that lefty pitcher, Ryan Maddox, and they have another lefty pitcher there that's pretty good. I don't know her name, but that's just a solid, well-coached team, and they're always going to do really well. So West Coast, I'm sure we're going to represent when it matters most, but you know what? I definitely like my group and definitely respect these two gentlemen's groups on
on the phone with us. I mean, Jay, me and you have had battles throughout the years, and I'm welcoming him in my first chance to play Josh here pretty soon. I've always kind of seen you guys from, you know, across the field, like, all right, here we go, PGF time, and it just hasn't worked out, so we're playing quite yet. So hopefully we'll get that chance.
Right on. And Brent, why don't you jump in there before we end up with these guys? I'm sure you have something to ask them.
That was a great hour. A lot of good stuff, you know. And I will echo what you guys said. Jerry Quinn with the Illinois Chill is doing a great job, and I know he's been very high on his 14 under team, and he's getting a lot of good players who are committed to schools in the Big Ten and SEC. And he was very high on his team last year, and they did well at PGF. But I think they could be a sleeper if people turn their backs on him. So. I just don't know this next year. It's going to be great to see how it plays out. Any of the three coaches and teams on this line could win it all. And, you know, it's going to be very competitive. So I'm just grateful that you guys came on. It was a very informative hour. I mean, I'm sure the people that care about club softball and 1600 especially, and you know, favorite colleges are going to get a lot of value out of tonight. So thanks, guys, for coming on.
I appreciate you having us, Brent, Carlos, Jay, Greg. It was good. I like catching up with people. So I want to just take this, you know, for opportunity really quick as a forum, just to say thanks to Brooks Cherry, with Tennessee Mojo. I mean, he's first class guy, took us in. It's been a real healthy environment for us. It's been a drama free year, and, we're certainly proud, you know, to represent Wilson DeMarini and Tennessee Mojo for sure.
Any final words there, Greg?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention Fernando Ornelas' team for Athletics Mercado as well. That team is going to be very good. So I would say make sure you guys watch out for them as well. Other than that, an absolute pleasure to be even considered. Thank you very much, and enjoying the conversation with you guys. So. Thank you very much.
And Jay, before we go, anything else you want to add?
No, I just thanks for having me. I love talking to these guys. Both have great teams. We all love softball and love doing good for these kids. So any opportunity we have to draw attention to it, I think is a good thing. So thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And it was good catching up with you guys.
All right. Thanks, fellas. It was a really great hour, and we appreciate having you guys on with us. So, Brent.
All right, see everybody later.
Right on. Hey.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
All right, later.
Brent, that was awesome. I mean, that was jam-packed with information, analysis. We touched on so many topics. I mean, what can you say?
Yeah, you could have them on another hour or two, and I'm sure it would go a different direction, and there'd be a lot of great information, but I found it interesting that, Josh Fisher's team is done and Greg's playing this week, if weather permits, at the pre-Thanksgiving, and Jay just got done with running the Bolts, T-Bolts event. So, you know, we still have some softball left, but it's holiday season. We're a week away from Thanksgiving, and hopefully everyone out there will get a chance, if they haven't done it yet, to get some rest and get healthy and get those nagging injuries off.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some incredible play. I think, one thing we didn't touch on, and, you know, I've been talking to you about is, you know, the Bandits, they have four extremely talented teams. I mean, that's, like, shocking, you know, like that much talent. Matt Hebling's team is probably playing the best out of those Bandits teams, but the other three are going to be in the rankings. I mean, they're that good. So, I mean, I wonder what you think about that, you know, that much in one organization.
It doesn't surprise me. Bill Conroy does a really good job of spreading out the talent so that the players get to play and build chemistry within their own subculture, if you will. But they do it the Bandits way, and they just attract really good talent from, all over the Midwest, you know, from Wisconsin to Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and Kentucky and elsewhere. So, it was a fun hour because we have three of the favorite teams if you had to look at the 1600 division, but I don't know if you could say Josh Fisher's team, obviously they're doing great, and they won PGF 14 under Nationals last year, but all of these teams are loaded. And if anybody gets hot at any given time, then there could be, some exciting Nationals at PGF and otherwise next summer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when you look at those 18 Nationals in recent years, and there's so many that have a shot at it. You know, it's just who gets hot at the right time, and that's the biggest part of it. But anyways, that was a great hour. I think we're going to call it right here. Go to extrainningsoftball.com for all the latest rankings, player, team, stories, features. We got it all. Any final words, Brent?
No, it's we're in the middle of rankings and, signing day, and we still have signing information coming up, and it's going to be fun to see who are the top ranked teams in 16 under as we go through this week. And then we'll get into Thanksgiving and December and, kind of go some different directions. But yeah, it's an exciting time. So softball never sleeps. It's always happening, always something going on.
Right on. That's it for us today. So thanks again for joining us. Bye-bye and have a good week.